Good evening and welcome to this meeting of Rydale District Council's Planning Committee. We've already heard the fire alarm procedure and where the facilities are. Can you please ensure that your mobile phones are switched off or on silent? We do have a number of speakers tonight. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Agenda item one, apologies for absence. Have we received any apologies?
We have received no apologies.
Thank you. Agenda item two, declarations of interest. Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. Item number six. This is in Rillington. And the thing is that there's a number of objections and a letter from my sister-in-law, but they all refer to the outline application, which was done a year ago. I have a question I'd like to raise on this one, but it's just an informative one. I've no pecuniary or otherwise interest in this, other than that I expressed my concerns earlier that the road could get blocked, which is a road I use, but this doesn't apply to that at all. This is thank you very much for that. Okay, so I don't feel I should leave the room, but I will if you'd like me to, but... I'm quite happy to stay without worry of being accused of any misdemeanour. Thank you.
No, I think you'll be more than happy to stop in the room, Councillor Maud. Does anybody else, any of the members, have any declarations? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Item number eight, the one at Terrington, I've got a personal declaration. I've done business with the previous owner of that and it's non-pecuniary though. Thank you.
Councillor Jean Udine.
Thank you, Chairman. Item number nine, it's my ward, but I have not been approached or had any communication with any of the parties.
Lovely, thank you. Okay. That looks like all the declarations. We'll move on to agenda item three, which is the minutes of the meeting held on the 24th of October 2017. Do you agree that these are a correct record? And Councillor Shields has moved them. Would anybody like to second them? Councillor Cleary. So I'll put those to the vote. That's unanimous. They have been approved. I have agenda item four, urgent business. I have one item of urgent business which was circulated to you all on the late pages, which was the timetables of meetings. Does any member foresee any problems with the timetable meetings for the Planning Committee? Any comments to make, or are we happy to go with those dates? Yeah, lovely. Do you need us to vote on that? No.
Okay. I think there is. Yeah. Yep. The council has recommended to approve.
Perfect. So, yeah. So I'll move that from the chair. Would anybody like to second that? Councillor Shields, I'll put that to the vote. Again, that's unanimous. Agenda item five is schedule of items to be determined by this committee. Agenda item six is the application land at rear of 56 Low Moorgate, Rillington, pages 7 to 33 on your agenda. And we don't have a speaker. Gary.
Thank you, Chairman.
as the local members already said in earlier in the declarations, this application is essentially the Reserve Matters approval proposal for what is what we all know as phase two of this particular development. And in terms of the planning permission, which is already granted, that established the principle of the development. We also had a layout at the time which showed the configuration of buildings on the site. And that also followed on from phase one, which also is in outline, and then we had the Reserve Matters submitted for that. So if members look at page 12 on the agenda papers, you can see the access road, which extends from the back half of the site, really, onto Lowmore Gate, and the newer houses adjacent to the main spine road at that point form phase one, and we're dealing with the other 18 at the back of the site. And as I say, that already has planning permission in outline. That was the subject, I think, of some discussion at the planning committee that approved that, and certainly I think the concerns that have continued to be expressed relate to the matter of the principal and the number of the dwellings and the parking access issues, which really are not before members tonight. We're here to discuss the remaining reserve matters. So to that end, many of the comments are really have previously been addressed when we granted the outline planning permission, so they're issues that have already gone. But there are a couple of updates to the reports that I just wish to draw to your attention, two of which we received today. But in advance of that, we did receive a further objector from a nearby resident who'd raised, again, those principal issues, so it wasn't really bringing anything new to the debate. And the complainant in that particular instance had raised comments about the development already commenced, but we can only assume that relates to phase one, which already has its full permission in place. What I do have are some photographs, but I'd like to just draw your attention to the location plan on page 11, because the two late comments we received over the phone today have come from an Elaine Bell and David Walker, who reside in number 28, I think it is, Manor View, which is a very new property, and also from the future occupiers of number 11 Manor View. And if you look at page 11, you'll see that Manor View is the small cul-de-sac to the south of the site. And members may also recall that we granted permission for two individual plots, and the objections come in from the people who weren't residents when we started dealing with this application. The issue that they've raised is not one of principle, but in relation to a matter of detail, which again, if I ask you to refer back to the layout plan on the next page on the agenda, and if you enlarge that, on that southern boundary of this site between what I think is shown as plot 12 and plot 11 at the end of the turning head there, if you can see it, what there is there are three underground gas storage tanks, and they've raised concerns about that particular issue. And of course, that's the first time that we've had any concerns raised about that whatsoever. So the case officer has spoken with our environmental health colleagues today, who have raised no objection to their siting. They do go on to point out that these installations are heavily regulated and controlled by the HSE. And so from their perspective, they have no concerns about the actual siting or location of the underground tanks. And clearly, Rillington is a location where we don't have gas, you know, in terms of mains. So, you know, from the outset, this design has been designed with that in mind. Clearly, the location of those tanks has to be at a place where then a tanker can decant to them. In the absence of a planning reason for requiring their relocation, it's unfortunate, but clearly we're not in a position, I think, as officers to be going back to the developer at this stage and saying you need to completely redesign your layout because of that situation, which we think is acceptable and in any event is controlled by the HSE, which is a sort of a... We can't mimic that control. But I have raised that with you. We quite literally got those comments this afternoon, and so that's why I'm raising it with you now. But before I sort of throw it open for debate, I do have one or two photographs just to take you through and remind everybody of the site. This is the entrance to the site off Low Moorgate, so this is where the access would come in, and indeed the new development is happening either side of this accessway. And moving into the site, you then start to get a feel for how the site opens out at the rear, and then these are all views panning round the site. So this is looking back towards the street and panning across, that's looking northwards. This is the outer boundary of the eastern boundary of the site, so you can see it's quite well screened from open countryside. Again, panning round and all the way round now the depth of the site. And this is looking back to the, I'll call them farm buildings, but they're almost like stable buildings, which are also form part of the application site. Those are demolished as part of the scheme. And that's a slightly more distant view, so you get a feel for the existing buildings in the village that are behind them. So, and that's looking straight down the barrel of the access road into the site. So it's got a relatively narrow entrance into the site with development either side, and then it becomes more of an estate layout in the depth. So that's it, Chairman.
Does anybody have any questions for the officer? No. A question. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chair. Gary, can you just take me through where phase two is in relation to phase one? Because I can't quite work out which bit's going where. I'm really sorry to be thick, but...
It is difficult off these plans because the plans show both phases. But if you're on page 12...
Yeah.
And if you look to where... You slightly enlarge it and look to where plots 5, 6 and 7 are, it's the terrace of 3. Can you see plots 5, 6 and 7?
Yeah.
So from there.
Yeah, thanks. That's fine. Sorry, I was just trying to get my bearing on where we were on the plan. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Chairman. My question was going to be about the gas tanks, and that has been answered. Thank you very much.
Okay, if there's no further questions, we'll move in to debate. As the ward member, Councillor Maud, would you like to take this one? Or would you prefer not to?
I prefer not to.
That's absolutely fine, not a problem. Would anybody else like to take this on? Fabulous. Right. Councillor Mrs. Burr.
I didn't really want to speak on this one because I think you probably remember I didn't particularly like this. I've still got my problems with it. I still think that there's going to be far too many cars parked on and around. But if you need it moving and no one else is willing to move it, then I can move it for you, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Burr. Anybody else wishing to speak? Then I shall second it from the chair, and I'll go straight to the vote. That's 9-4 and 1 abstention. The application is approved. Moving on to agenda item 7, where the application is 6 Market Place, Kirby Moorside, pages 34 to 50 on your agenda. The officer will outline the application and then we do have a speaker.
Thank you, Chairman. This particular application, you'll see, was one which we were unable to give you a final recommendation on the agenda papers when they were issued. And again, unfortunately for the late pages, we also weren't in a position to having spoken to the North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership, who had received further information from the applicant's agent and also their approved inspector, in terms of controlled means of escape in case of fire from the buildings. And obviously that's quite a sensitive issue, as you'll appreciate. But we are risking treading on the building reg side of things, but it was so part and parcel of some of the comments that we'd received in terms of the numbers of flats and the like that we felt the need to go that extra mile. And indeed, I was on site yesterday with the agent to fully understand myself in terms of the proposals to fully understand them, because when you look at the drawings, it's still not the same as being on the site and actually looking at all of the proposed alterations, which are quite numerous. I'll show you some photographs in a moment, but in essence what we have, which you can see on page 40, is a substantial building, which itself is almost two buildings when you look at the photographs, differing ridge heights and numbers of floors, which are hard on the back edge of the footway on Market Place. And through that building, currently to the side of the building on the southern side, there's a doorway access. There are all other sort of slightly convoluted accesses through what is a very extensive area of ground floor, which covers the bulk of the site altogether and physically links to what's shown on that plan as the annex at the back, which itself is a more traditional building. And in essence, the concerns that were expressed to us by North Yorkshire Building Control at the outset were the proposed flats in those buildings, which are two flats, how that is controlled in the case of an event having to go through another building to get to a means of escape. So that's really we've been wrestling with for some time now. And unfortunately, we didn't have that sorted before the committee agenda went. But we've now managed to resolve that. There has been a discussion directly between the independent approved inspector and North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership, where both have agreed that there is a solution here, which is actually broadly shown on the planning plans. But when it comes to the building regs, there will be a fire safety strategy also required, which is obviously a lot more detailed documents, and that will happen at that stage. When you look at the plans which are shown on page 43, I don't know if you can sort of get a feel for that, you've essentially got quite a number of floors here that are being subdivided. The retail unit that's being proposed, the additional retail unit that's being proposed on ground floor on the proposed plan, which is the centre of those plans here, is showing what currently is a very big retail unit, essentially subdivided into to create another one. But through the front entrance door, a corridor is formed, which currently doesn't exist, into that shop unit. And that helps with the circulation and manoeuvring and movement around the building. So effectively, you've got two accesses in and out from the front onto the street. At ground floor at the moment, there is no... You can't get out onto a courtyard at ground floor at the moment. It's all covered in. When I show you the photographs, hopefully that will make it mean just a little bit more to you. So without further ado, I'll show you the photographs that we have. So this is the premises. It's right at the junction of the main street in the town, close to the junction with Howe End. So it's sandwiched in between the solicitors this side. And what is currently a vacant unit, although we have had a representation from the owner of that unit, it currently is unoccupied. So this is the property that we're dealing with today. Okay, and at the moment, this is one doorway. This is another shared doorway, but the passageway is blocked beyond the doorway. It spreads either side into the shop rather than going through the property as it originally would have done. In fact, there's evidence of a fantastic tile floor that's just about to be excavated as part of this works, I would suspect. This is just a close-up looking down the street, so you probably all will be familiar with it as the antique shop in Kirby Moorside. This is a view looking up. I'm not sure what that's really showing everybody. There aren't any external alterations to the building. It's not listed, but it is in the conservation area. And this is a view looking back towards the solicitor's building. Now, this is a view with the main front door to the existing shop open, and you can probably see that it's currently blocked in this area here. That is all opened up, and you go through. So this is the tile floor I was just talking about. This is a view. This is the annex building at the back, but I'm already standing one floor up because this is already all shop on the ground floor. This is all opened up, and that floor effectively disappears down. This is the window of the neighbouring, or one of the windows of the neighbouring solicitors who had expressed some concerns, as you picked up from the committee report. I did note that this particular office, which has got a particularly unfortunate 1960s or 70s window, is actually well screened because they choose to screen it. But this floor level will disappear down, and this floor to wall height will mean there is no overlooking from this site into that site. I just can't envisage how that would possibly be physically possible to do it. As part of the scheme, this later addition, bit of lean-to roof, actually is demolished as part of the scheme. Unfortunately, you just can't get far enough back to give you a good view of the annex, but this is the other side of the annex, looking back towards the flank wall of number 4, again another boundary wall. And in the distance, just to orient yourself, these are the front roofs of the properties on Howe End. So you're looking back round the corner, and you get a feel for how the levels change. They're all over the place at this point, but there aren't really any amenity issues looking back the other way. I did take this photograph from Howe End just to give you a feel for how screened it is, because this is effectively the old road into the town, and this is the boundary screening wall and hedgerow. And as you can see, that little roof there, that's the roof of the annex building. So it's set back and very well screened. It's about the only point you can see it from here. If I'd moved another 10 yards down, you wouldn't see that roof line. So that's it, Chairman. In essence, because we've reached this agreement between the applicant's approved inspector and North Yorkshire Building Control, we are in a position to recommend approval of the application. And as part of that, we would recommend conditions, as you'd expect us to do. Those would include a standard time limit condition, the list of the approved plans, details of all new windows and doors to be submitted and agreed where there are new ones, and details of the finished appearance of the boundary walls and copings to be submitted, because there will be some minor amendments to the boundary wall. Mention has been made of the velux in the rear northeastern elevation of flat 1, which, if members can turn to, I think it's page 45, Chairman, on what is shown there as the proposed elevation on the bottom left-hand corner of that drawing. There is a velux roof window which is relatively low in the roof void in relation to floor level. We are suggesting that if that velux is retained, it would need to be obscure glazed. We would wish to see that. The applicant, I think for his part, has suggested that they may not even need it, but I'll wait to hear from the agent. The sixth point, really, which was one which is a slightly unusual condition, but it's one to really ensure that what we design remains safe, which is all about common access areas and means of escape to be kept in common ownership. So, in other words, you know, there isn't any future subdivision which then means somebody says, well, you can't come out through this route or that route. I understand that's agreeable to the applicant, but his agent's registered to speak. So we'll wait to hear on that point, Chairman. I've nothing else to add at this stage.
So if the agent, Mr. Paul Smith, would like to come and speak. It's the large one in the middle, at the front. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'd just like to set the scene really on behalf of the applicant, and to point out that, you know, he's not a greedy developer who's trying to put high value flats into Kirby Moore Street, High Street. We're trying to turn these into affordable units from both a retail and a residential point of view. We've actually been at it since 2015, and this is the scheme in its fourth guise. And as such, we've been at it, as I say, for nearly 2 years and worked with Gary's team and tried to handle the and take on board the objections both from the planning department and from the objectors themselves. And our aim really is to turn what is, you know, a traditional building back into something that actually looks pretty and is fit for purpose. And at the moment, as you can see, it's going downhill fairly rapidly. There are problems with the site, and I won't go back over what Gary said, but it's difficult to get to gather from the photos exactly how the levels work and how complicated the building is. And in fact, it's a number of different buildings that have been welded together over time with some bad extension work. And to a fair extent, certainly at the back of the building, it's been ruined. And our scheme, I think, now simplifies the building and turns it back into the traditional buildings that it once was. And in fact, there's more demolition going on here than there is construction. So, as Gary pointed out, the corrugated tin roof side extension on the annex will go. The horrible flat roof, which is currently a kind of roof terrace, will go, and the courtyard as was will be reinstated below. So we believe that, you know, that turns it back into the building that it once was to a large extent. The benefits, I think, for Kirby Moorside is that it stops the rot, and that building will come back into use. And at the moment, it's kind of semi-derelict with some tenants above the retail units, but very little some retail in the ground floor and residential units above, but it's by no means full. The intention as well is to restore the facade to its former glory, so that the asset that is the conservation area in Kirby Moorside will be enhanced. At the moment, that front facade is going to rack and ruin, and the paint's peeling, and it looks pretty bad and will only get worse, but we're not intending to change that, in fact, just to restore it. And at the end of the day, the benefit as well, I think, is that it meets the planning principles of creating both affordable housing or residential units and also retail. Because, as I say, the retail units are so big at the moment, the applicant's struggling to rent them out. I'd just like to touch very briefly on the objections. Parking, well, highways have no issue.
30 seconds left.
But the tenants that live there at the moment actually don't have cars. Overlooking's been resolved. The infrastructure, well, we'd like to see people living in Kirby. The impact on businesses, well, they'll shop and use the public houses and even Kitchen Walker. The flooding's not an issue anymore, as we won't use the basements. And the fire escape issue, as Gary says, through the building inspectors, has been resolved. So I'd just like to thank the officers for their help and hope that as members you can support it.
Thank you. Do members have any questions for the officers? Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. Maybe I've misread the plans, but am I right in assuming that there's no entry into the back of this development? It looks as though it's enclosed, and that's the way I read it. Am I 100% right in thinking that?
The entrance, both entrances come off the
front.
The front, yeah.
Yeah.
There was an old doorway in the side of the annex building, but that is not available to the applicant.
Thank you.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chair. I don't really know whether this is a planning issue or not, but certainly with only front entrances available, how are they going to deal with refuse from these plots, and where are they going to store dustbins and things? I mean, it is I think it's a fair question, because the last thing we want is there'll be six bins and perhaps two for the retail or three for the retail units. So where are they going to go, and how are we going to get them out?
They're on the amended plan, Chairman. They're on page 43. They're shown on the ground floor there in the courtyard area. Can you see them? Yeah, they'd have to bring them through the building. Yes, yeah. But in terms of the bin storage area within the site, they're actually kept in what will be an open courtyard rather than what currently is actually within the building. I mean, I think the concern from certain persons was that they might be just in bags and chucked out the front on the, you know, and that clearly isn't the intention.
Any further questions? Councillor Windrus.
Yeah, the agent did touch on it, but the basement, it's not shown on the existing plans, but on the proposed plans. I'm presuming by what the agent said, it's not going to be used as living space. Yeah, that's fine.
Any further questions? Councillor Burr.
Yeah, I know you'll probably say that this is all being taken care of through the the fire report, etc. But could you give me a brief on exactly what we are going to do for the people who live in this in this block? So I would imagine that we're going to probably put sprinklers in, we're going to probably put electric windows in at the top, etc., etc., etc. I just really would like to clarify in my own mind regarding the safety of these tenants.
My understanding, having spoken to North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership, as opposed to the approved inspector the applicant's been speaking to, is that we're talking at building control stage of there being a complete fire safety strategy. But we are already in receipt of a drawing from the approved inspector, which gives indications of how that would be controlled, fire doors, all that sort of stuff. I would be very surprised if there aren't sprinklers involved at that stage. But what we have here is also at the moment there's only what I would call one proper access, although there are two doorways. This scheme provides for two accesses in from the front, so immediately you've got a doubling up of potential exits from the building.
Okay. No further questions. We'll move into debate. We haven't got a local member here for Kirby Moorside. Does anybody wish to take this? Councillor Windrus.
It's like the picture show, it is a bit running into disrepair, that building, and I'm sure there is a need in Kirby Moorside for affordable flats to rent or whatever. So the only thing is, I do agree with the town council about the parking. I know the agent said that the people that live there probably don't have cars at the moment, but that doesn't mean to say in the future they won't have. However, having said that, in the daytime, the parking in Kirby Moorside has improved since the top of the market was made to 2 hours, as opposed to parking all day. So there might be a bit of an issue at night, but I can't see any problem that way, so I'll move approval.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Burr.
So where do I start with this one? Good and bad. I think there's definitely a need for some more housing, some bringing back of properties into better use. I think that that's a good idea. I think that the particular front of that building is beautiful, and I think that because it hasn't been maintained, painted and repaired, isn't really a viable thing to say, oh well, it's falling into disrepute. You know, paint and repair keeps something beautiful and makes it look good. I think that we will have a problem with parking whether we like it or not, but that's something that we've just got to get round. But what I can't get my head around with this, and because Gary hasn't 100% convinced me about the safety, it's not going to be for me to be able to support this. If this had been maybe one or two flats, then that's fair enough. But I think for the amount of what we're asking for, and the agent did say this is not a greedy developer. I don't really know why he threw that into the mix about a greedy developer. But I think what you've got to do is you've got to not max out your properties just because you can. I think you've got to probably look at everything. I'm sure that you'll all vote for this and it'll all go through, but I really feel that I need my conscience to be clear about that to be safe. Now, if we are going to have a complete sprinkler system put in there, if it's going to be absolutely rigorously checked, and because there is no access to the back for the fire brigade to get to, that's got to be absolutely hook, line and sinker, and it is costly to whoever develops this, but it's got to be put in place for these people. So because I haven't got that here, and I'm not sure that that's going to happen. I can't support it. But I would have felt much happier, and I would have embraced it if there hadn't have been so many. I think probably it is just over-egging it. There's nobody who wants to see old properties brought back into to good use in the middle of a town. That's what we're striving for. But, as I say, that is an awful lot of properties on one quite small site with no access to the back. You know, there's a lot of constraints on it. I understand what the builder is trying to do and the developer. I absolutely get that. But for me, it's just gone a little bit overboard with it. So I guess, you know, you'll all have your different reasons for what you do things. And I would like to say that I have shopped, and I don't think I need to declare an interest, but I have shopped in that particular shop. And it's busy, it's great, he has some great stuff in, and it's full. So I'm not quite sure which bits, maybe I don't know it obviously as well as you do. I don't understand which bits aren't being able to be let out. I'm just talking about the two windows there. So on this occasion, I aren't disagreeing with what Gary is saying. I'm just wanting my concerns to be absolutely loud and clear as to exactly why I won't be supporting this. It's not, as I say, it's because I just think I can't satisfy myself to think that all those people, and if there's a family in there, if, you know, because people do have bunk beds, etc., there could be an awful lot of people, and you've just got to look at these things. So I've said my piece. I'm not going to vote against it, but on this occasion I can't go with it tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Burt. Gary, did you want to come back?
Some of the concerns that Councillor Burr has expressed have been concerns for the case officer and myself as well, because clearly we tread that tightrope of not replicating other legislation. But I think all officers who've looked at this have been mindful of not wanting to approve something that couldn't possibly meet the building regulations and the requirements of the fire safety officer. So that was really the issue. And to some extent, as you'll have gained from the planning committee report already, that the number of units has dropped in terms of flats from 6 to 5. What I was wanting to be confident of was that North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership, who may not be the building control dealing with this, we don't know who will be used, were in a position to say, yes, this is achievable. And that's where we are, Chairman. But what they are saying to us is that in terms of going to the next stage of the building regulations approval and meeting with the requirements of the fire officer, who has also been just mentioned, requires a large amount of information to be put forward at this stage when there isn't a planning permission in place. But it is conceivable that we could grant planning permission tonight, for example, and a scheme is put forward that isn't acceptable under the building regulations because of that. But it can be. And so what we wanted to do was be in a position where we knew that we were at least in a position to, having granted planning permission, there being a strong likelihood of a building regulations approval for following that on. But there isn't a building regulations application for us at the moment, so I can't look you in the eye and say that's what's happening. But if there wasn't a high level of confidence, and our decisions have to be made on the grounds of the balance of probability, then that's how we make our planning decisions.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I worked in York in a Georgian building, between two buildings with no fire escape other than the staircase out of the building. And it was one of those things that we were acutely aware. If you're on the third floor of a building, or the fourth floor even, how do you get out? And that for me is the concern with this scheme in front of us. In principle, I really like the scheme. I like the fact that we are bringing underused property back into the market with small units for people who perhaps can't afford, you know, a semi-detached house on Broughton Road, but this gives us smaller units. But my deep concern, like Councillor Burr, is the fire safety issues, and I think we would be remiss if we didn't give it proper consideration. And like Councillor Burr, I'd very much like to support it, but actually, without knowing for sure that there's going to be a top dollar sprinkler system in there, I think I will be abstaining from making a decision on this one.
Thank you. Sorry, can I just... It's just I want it on record. That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely fine. Does anybody else, any other member wish to speak? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, Chairman, surely the fire authority have looked at this and have no great thoughts, have they? They have.
We've only had direct contact with North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership.
Fire authority haven't been...
Well, no, Chairman, they would deal with... If North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership were telling that there is no hope on this, then we wouldn't have gone... You know, we wouldn't be in the position we're in. But as and when a detailed building regulation submission is made, either via North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership or whoever the independent approved inspector is, they will have to have the approval of the fire officer to basically be giving it a building regulations approval. So what they're telling us is that there is a the likelihood of a strategy being agreed, but we're treading the line of where we're treading from planning into building regulations approval. And what I need to be able to say to you tonight is that we are confident that's doable. You'll have seen from the date of this application, we've taken our time to get to a point where we've brought this to you.
Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Thank you, Chairman. Since there is this great concern, clearly, I think this matter should be deferred until we can find out definitely that there is going to be some further investigation about the safety, because if anything went wrong, you know, it'd be pretty awful. And we've had enough fires in this country, and not only the one in London, dreadful one. We've had them in Norton Town as well.
Chairman, I really do need to pitch in.
Can we defer it, please? Yeah.
I really do need to pitch in at this point, because we can't replicate other control regimes. Obviously, there's a huge sensitivity about fire, and for a variety of reasons, both locally and nationally. But if you grant planning permission tonight, and that is possible tonight, and this development does not get building regulations approval, it can't be carried out. We can't replicate building regulations approval. What I wanted to be in a position to do, say to you tonight, is... We believe that there is a solution under the building regs without granting a planning permission, which we could have done months ago, onto a scheme that hadn't a hope in hell of meeting a building regs approval, which would have been a waste of everybody's time. We've now spent months getting to the point now where North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership, in discussion with the approved inspector who the applicant has brought to the table with a scheme, saying this will meet the building regulations. There still has to be that process that's gone through. And that is quite a costly and expensive process. In the absence of a planning permission, the applicant is not prepared to spend that money. And to be blunt, I can't blame him. And, you know, the grant of a planning permission tonight does not mean this will happen. Because if there is, at the end of all this, a failure to satisfy other legislation, it won't happen.
OK, so we've got Councillor Windrus moved the application... the recommendation, and I've had Councillor Shields move a recommendation for deferral. I, from the Chair, will second to move the recommendation, because as Gary has quite rightly pointed out, we are straying into building control areas, and they are professionals with regards to the fire regulations and building regulations, and I feel confident that they will seek to get a good scheme out of that, and we can be reassured with their officers. So it's been moved and seconded. So I will now put the application to the vote. That's 7-4 and 3 abstentions. The application has been approved. Right, we'll move on to agenda item 8, which is application lamp to rear of the Forge, North Bank Lane, Terrington, pages 51 to 60 on your agenda. We do have a speaker, and so the officer will outline the application for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Members will probably recall this plot. In fact, it came to our committee earlier in the year. It was one of two plots off North Back Lane in Terrington that were proposed for infill plots within the development limits of this village, which falls within our other village category. And this was the plot to the east of the school. So if you can remember, this is the school building behind the plot here. This was the plot that had a traditional building on the frontage and goes into the depth of the site there. The other plot was the other side of the school, which was the one which had the workshop buildings on it. I think this was the one that came to committee because we had objections from people to the south who were concerned about potential overlooking. And obviously members debated the application back in March and granted planning permission in outline, despite the fact that it was within the conservation area. Members will recall that we had some drawings which showed the scale and proportion of what the resulting building would look like, and a planning permission was granted which tied the permission to the design criteria shown in those amended plans. As part of the application also, because it's in the other village location, it was also subject to the local needs occupancy condition, so that's where we ended up in March. I think the other point to raise was that at the time that the application was submitted, as we do with all of these types of applications for infill plots in other villages, service villages, other villages, we do ask for some evidence as to the local need for these dwellings. Otherwise, it sort of makes a mockery of the development plan process. And just to sort of go back to first principles, our development plan seeks to allocate most of the housing in Rydale to the market towns and then a smaller amount to the service villages. And whilst that plan was evolving, members, I think, were concerned about being able to have some flexibility in the plan to provide in other village locations plots for local need, if that need was proven, or that there was a strong likelihood that there was going to be a need. So at the time the application was submitted, Bramwell Blencarn, acting on behalf of the current landowner, who I think is still the current owner of this site, submitted letters from three estate agents at the time, which was Hunters and Bolton, Cooper and Cundles, basically add their input to the process. And they were, in essence, essentially saying they were both, all of them were being approached by local people who would meet the local needs occupancy conditions, who were either resident of Terrington or the adjacent parish. That was evidence of the local need for this type of plot. And on the strength of that, we granted planning permission. Had we not been convinced of that, we would not have granted planning permission in the first place because there wasn't a local need. So that really is the start point for all this. And that's the development plan start point. Members will probably be aware that we've had a number of applications having granted those types of planning permissions where then the applicants come back in fairly short order and sought to challenge the condition either by applying to have them lifted or by going straight to appeal. And in those appeal situations, the inspectors have played it straight down the line in terms of what the development plan says. This particular application is slightly unusual in the sense that it proposes to add to the condition with the words that are set out in your description of development. And I'm not going to repeat that because it's very wordy, and the report is quite wordy, Chairman. What this distills to in the end is that we're not convinced as officers that a sufficient argument has been put forward to warrant a departure from your adopted policy in relation to local needs occupancy conditions. So that's where we are, Chairman. I think the applicant has registered to speak, so I'm not going to say any more at this stage. If there is anything I need to come back on, I will.
Thank you. Mr. Matthew Clark. If you could turn the microphone on. Lovely. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. My family and I live within the village of Terrington with my children that attend a village primary school, and we meet the requirements of the LNO. We're outgrowing our existing property and require something slightly larger, but we are priced out of a larger property within the area, but this opportunity would provide this. I accept that the wording I've submitted as part of my planning application is not correct in its current form, but we're looking at it as a starting point. This application was submitted because I was told I could not get advice on any potential rewording, as this would prejudge any potential planning application we may submit. Please use this opportunity to discuss the principles of what we're trying to achieve rather than the precise wording. We're not trying to remove the LNO, only make it workable for all residents rather than just cash buyers. With the current situation, only cash buyers could develop this site. Is it the intention that the LNO would only help the richest in our society? If you have sufficient funds to develop the site without requiring lending, then the likelihood is your housing needs could be met by the existing housing stock and that you would not be eligible to live in the property anyway. I believe the two amendments I'm trying to achieve should be achievable without adversely affecting the LNO, what it is trying to do, as they are working successfully elsewhere in the country. The feedback that we have had is that the parish level is too small. We've proposed a cascading amendment, where I accept this wording may need some work. I strongly feel that the 12-month period before the cascade kicks in may prevent mortgage lending, a position supported by the documentation I've submitted from the Chartered Institute of Housing and the Homeland Communities Agency, but a 6-month period may work. In the case of a mortgage default, we have proposed the mortgagee in possession clause. I propose the wording which is used by the Lake District National Parks Planning Authority. Although I'm not a solicitor, I do feel that we should be able to achieve a wording on this clause that would work. It has been commented on that we have not provided sufficient evidence from the mortgage companies to back up a claim. I was not advised on what or how much information I'd need to support for this. I will be working again with the mortgage companies, although I'd like to point out that as we need a self-build mortgage, and there's relatively few of those around, and that mortgage companies will not instruct on what wording they will accept, as they cannot instruct an applicant in that way, this information will be quite hard to provide.
30 seconds left.
They have said that they would potentially be able to comment on any potential rewording we could come up with if it was submitted with a letter from the council to say if they could work with it or not. Although within your comments from the planning officer, they have proposed that an S106 agreement could be a potential solution that would allow us to raise a mortgage against land and develop it. And I'd be very happy to explore this option with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, I think that was... It was interesting. I think the issue that we had, and unfortunately our case officer, who's actually the case officer, who's now on adoption leave, so Jill's inherited the case, and we've been wrestling with this, really, is in essence the case as it stands at the moment just simply doesn't seem to make sense to us. And I know that the case officer did offer to speak directly to lenders or whoever, because at the moment, whilst we have a list of potential lenders who've been put forward as, you know, people that the applicant has spoken to, we've got nothing documentary from those lenders. So at the moment, we've got nothing documented. As it stands tonight, it just seems to me that we're just not in a position to contemplate approval of this application. You've got two options. You either refuse it or you defer it to try and go further. But at this stage, that's going to be... quite a task, I think.
Are there any questions for Councillor Goodrick?
Can I ask you, through you, Chair, the speaker tonight, is he the owner of the land? No, no. So what we're trying to do is establish whether we can build a house there with the local needs occupancy clause for this gentleman to build.
He already complies with the local needs occupancy clause. It's the what the applicant is saying is that
he can't get a mortgage.
Yeah.
On that basis, because I thought I was very clear, having read the report, that it was quite clearly the local plan says it has to be a local needs occupancy. But there is a local need, because
the local plan requires anybody making an application in another village to demonstrate in making the application for the dwelling that there is a local need. And then the local needs occupancy condition requires that person who would then subsequently be the occupier of the property to either reside in the parish or the adjacent parish or all the other exceptions. So that comes back again to your exception to your normal policy of building a house that just anybody could live in a dispersed location. So that's where we are. The issue here is not one that we've understood, having spoken to officers of the National Park, for example, which is really where the LNO had its inception in terms of contemplating the operation of it in Rydale, is that there have been problems with people gaining mortgages on local needs occupancy properties. But it would be fair to suggest that because of the rather more specialist nature of the product, it's not a high street, you know, it's not a bulk buy mortgage that you're looking at. You might have different deposit situations, you might have different interest rate situations, you know, all of those things. But our colleagues in the National Park have not suggested that anybody who's occupying a property in the National Park is coming along as a cash buyer. So that's been part of the issue. And yes, the applicant has submitted some information about mortgage lenders that they've been to, but we haven't got anything from the mortgage lenders. We don't know what they've been asked. We don't know what, you know, we don't know whether anybody's gone particularly through that process. So at the moment, it's just a question, we haven't got enough evidence to look at it and say, yes, there's a case here to contemplate either waiving or varying the condition. In this case, it's a variation of the condition. So that's where we are. So tonight, I think you've got two choices. You either defer it to do further work or you refuse it. Because at the moment, it's contrary to your development plan.
Councillor Goodwick, got another question.
Do you believe we can find a solution? Because if you think you can find a solution, then I'm quite happy to move deferral. Because what I don't want to do is, I believe we're absolutely right in the local plan and that this should have a local needs occupancy clause on it. And I don't want to undervalue any of that. If you think we can find a solution and work on this, then I'm quite happy to move deferment.
The answer to that, being brutally honest to you, Councillor Goodrick, is I don't know. And until, you know, we've got something which is truly compelling, you know, you've all been to the planning training again, and the start point is the consideration of any application is the development plan. And I think the perception of how this policy was intended to operate was not as a sort of slightly lower cost market housing plot, but actually a compelling need for a particular need. And at that point, we have granted planning permission, not just in Terrington, but in some of the other villages, for plots where applicants, landowners, usually, have come forward and said, well, look, I've got a plot that I think through my own knowledge, research and the like, there is a local need for a dwelling, and put forward the case. But they're never... they're not quite as precise as, say, your agricultural worker's dwelling, where you've got a really detailed case. We're taking the information really forward on the balance of probabilities, again, the first time we've mentioned that tonight, based on estate agent information. And some of that's slightly anecdotal, but you build up a picture and say, right here, was there a case in the first case for granting two plots, actually, either side of the school, for local needs occupancy? And that was because of... perceived demand from not one, not two, but three estate agents who are familiar with the Terrington area, very popular, and not many service villages, you know, in that locality. So that's where we started from. But that's where we are at the minute, and it seems to me that the justification's some way off, and whether that means we... I wouldn't say if it was deferred tonight I'd be in a position to be bringing you something back for your December meeting, that's really what I'm saying. You know, we could engage in a discussion with the applicant and perhaps be back in the new year with having investigated that, not really have made any progress, but at least would have done a bit more. Maybe we've got a bit more out of the lending organisations that undoubtedly the applicant has referred to. But it won't be, I don't think it'll be a quick process.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you. Yeah, I think our plan is sound, and I also think tonight a need has been established. And I think we've got ourselves in quite an interesting situation, and I think it's quite an interesting situation to explore and see actually where it gets us to, because this might be our first, but it might not be our last. So I would look at it as, well, let's move forward and let's actually look and see what we can achieve. And my question, and Caroline's already asked it, I was going to say to Gary, do you think with more information you could guarantee that? I'm not going to ask that question now. What I'm going to say is that I think that there's a valid reason that we should defer it tonight, because if we could ask Gary to explore all the ways he can to see if we can make this work and then bring it back to us, I think that that would be a way of sticking to our plan, but obviously looking at different situations that come in. So our plan is fluid and it's running all the time, and we are a committee that actually doesn't shy away from difficult choices and decisions that we've got to make. So I would be happy to defer it if you would second it, because I think that there is some merit in this, and it, as Caroline said, it wouldn't undermine our plan.
I think the plan sets out the rationale for you know, where development goes. The plan also sets out with policy SP21 the approach to how we apply occupancy conditions across the piece. It's not just local needs, but agricultural, whatever it is. And so the plan doesn't say ye shall not. What it says is, if you're going to do this, this is what you have to do. And I think the sensitivity about any of those types of conditions, be they agricultural occupancy conditions, holiday conditions or whatever, is if you set them aside lightly, for want of a better phrase, then you risk driving a coach and horses through the bulk of your plan. So you need to make sure your arguments are right. At the moment they're not, so that's where we are. I've no way of knowing at the end of all this whether they would be. There is a process that could be gone through, but I think it could take some time to get there. To some extent, you know, we can engage in that. If you defer this tonight, which is an option, and we can consider that, then we would approach the applicant and say, right, this is what we think you need to do to come back with, and that might take the applicant some time to do that. But you end up with a situation where there might be a better case being made to bring back to you as members. But until that's done, I can't say to you, well, and again, answering Councillor Goodrich's question, I can't say to you that I think it will. I just don't know at the moment.
If I could come back there. No, Gary, that's what I said. I'm not going to ask you the same question, because I don't think you can answer us. You can't give us a yes. So I think you should explore it, and I don't know when we should move it, but if we move it now to defer, or if, Chairman, you want us to move into bit and then move for deferment, I would like to hope that the whole committee thought that there was, it's an interesting conundrum, and it would be nice to see where it leads us.
Are there any more questions for the officer? No, so we'll move into debate, and Councillor Goodrich as your county ward.
Thank you, Chairman. I think we're in danger of going round in a circle here. We simply don't have the answers to make a proper decision, I don't feel, tonight. I know the officers have marked it for refusal. I think there might be a little bit of work that can be done. What I don't want us to do is in any way undermine our plan and undermine the reasons that we've got in SP21. They're important. I'm not prepared to sacrifice the plan to make this work. But if we can make it work, I'd like to move it to be deferred so that we've got that opportunity. But the applicant must realise that it may not work and we will be back here refusing, but I'd like us to give it a chance.
Chairman, please rest assured, you know, officers will defend the plan. We're built to do. But that doesn't mean that we're not proactive in terms of trying to find out what a case is, if a case is to be made. But at this stage, and I'll say this while the applicant's listening, is that I can't guarantee that we will get there. At the end of the day, to some extent, the what happens next sort of lies in the applicant's own hands, in the sense that if he's not happy with it, he could appeal a non-determination. You know, if he felt that he wasn't getting any further forward locally. I'm not sure whether that would be a good or a bad thing to do, but it's an option. In the meantime, you know, that we can, I think, move forward and saying, look, this is what we think's missing, and you need to respond to this, and see what comes of that process. You know, but I think it could be, it probably won't be your next meeting that you're talking about this.
Councillor Burr.
Yeah, I think deferral is the right way to go. I think no one on this committee wants our plan spoiled in any way. But I do think that we should take this opportunity. It may arise again, and I think it would be good for officers to look at this. You've already said, and we quite understand that there's no guarantee. We're not asking you for a guarantee. We're just asking you to have a look at the options and bring them back to us. And I think that because a need has been proven, I think we have a justification to do that. It hasn't been proven in writing, but the guy lives in the village. So, I think that's a good, sound reason for deferral, Gary. And good luck with that.
Lovely. It's been moved and seconded for deferral, so I'll put that to the vote. That's 9-4 and one abstention. That has been approved for deferral. Right, agenda item 9, application at Manor House Farm, Main Street, East Luton, pages 61 to 69 on your agenda. We have no speakers, and Gary will outline the application.
That's not it. That's the main house. I'm sure Councillor Jane Udine will probably recall it. But that's the view of the main listed building from the main road. Going round the back, there it is. And in amongst these trees, the trees aren't protected in any way, shape or form, but here is the tree house. And it's a bit dark, you can't really see too much, but a couple of windows and... as part of this rather intricate tree house design, so it's very impressive, better than any tree house I ever built, is a bit of an open veranda, a sort of canopy area with a projecting platform, which is open. And this is the view looking towards the eastern site boundary, so again you see the tree house in amongst the trees, and that building there is the adjacent property's sort of outbuilding, so you can orient yourself on that when I show you some later photographs. There is then a boundary wall, and as you see, you see that the land drops from the north to the south towards the back of the buildings. It is slightly elevated, however, it's about a metre or so above ground level. This is the view from the neighbouring objector's property. And this isn't immediately behind the house of the neighbouring property, but is in the sort of gravel parking area. And again, although it's some distance away, you can see the treehouse at a slightly elevated level. This is the garden. So that's that gravelled area I was just showing you. This is moving back towards the back of the adjacent dwelling, at which point you can only just about see the roof of the treehouse. So it's immediately disappearing behind existing boundaries and vegetation. This is a view from the treehouse platform across the to the west. And it's not really affecting anything there. And this is a view from the raised area. So you're looking down on the little pond that's in front of it. And from this, you can see into the back of the property. So that's the from the veranda area. And it's that area where the additional trellising has been proposed to be put just to act as a bit of a screen. And this is a view from that veranda, which projects just a little bit from this. This is the treehouse, projects out a little bit. So from that distance, although you're not looking at into the back of the house, you're looking across it, even towards the adjacent but one house, but it's a long way away. That's the view from within the windows that are within the treehouse. Imagine when those are shut, you're not seeing much out of this rather dirty plastic. But with the windows open, again, you can see just into the back of the house there. You just see one of the windows. But it is oblique. It is at some distance. The amended plan did show this additional trellising and the like that we've consulted with the neighbour. The neighbours maintain their objection. On balance, we think this is acceptable.
Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Windrus.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wondered, treehouse with a swimming pool, what band of council tax to pay?
I think that was the only way they could make the water stay in the pond, because it was going downhill, because they hadn't put a little wall around it.
Moving on to the next question, Councillor Burr.
Has this come to us because there's an objection, or do we have to have planning permission?
Certainly would require planning permission for a treehouse like that. Yeah. Yes, it's with you before because of the neighbour objection, who continues to object, notwithstanding the revisions that have been proposed to the scheme. So, sadly, the way the current scheme of delegation works, and clearly we could review that scheme of delegation, the objection does seem to be rather harsh, in my opinion. But some of it's about perception. You know, you can perceive it, so I think on the receiving end of that, you assume it's a direct line of sight and overlooking. The reality is that the distances and the level of screening are such that I personally would find it very difficult to say that there was an amenity issue that's sufficient to justify a refusal. I certainly wouldn't fancy the appeal or the enforcement notice that we'd have to serve to take it down.
As
a local member.
Councillor
Mrs. Shales.
I think this is quite fascinating. I can't remember when ever a tree has been talked about before. What sort of life expectancy has the treehouse? I mean, do we know? It looks pretty stout.
It's fairly solidly built. Yes. I think the age of the users is probably such that, you know, it may have a natural life that way, and I think the height of the users means that what Niamh was seeing, maybe some of them won't be seeing quite as much. But again, we're making a decision on the balance of probability, aren't we?
Tied up with that question, if I may, I mean, do we actually know the sort of roughly the age of those who are going to use the treehouse, basically?
Well, they are fairly young children, but I don't know the ages of them. But it could be that they grow up to be teenagers and having a romantic obsession with the treehouse. I suppose I don't know.
Right. Okay.
Again, difficult right. One.
Thank you,
Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Right, I'll just compose myself. I mean, presumably this is only a certain height, and these children are going to grow. And as you say, it's going to be restrictive in that respect. But, I mean, this is surely this is temporary. It's not a permanent dwelling. I mean, I really don't understand really why it is before this committee tonight, because I think we've got far bigger things to worry about than a tree house and a perception of overlooking, because I don't think children are interested in what the next door neighbours are doing. They're just interested in playing in the tree house.
I would regard this as a playhouse. It just happens to be on stilts and it's around a tree, but it nevertheless it because of the size of it and the height above ground, it triggers those, you know, temporary ancillary building criteria, and it has been caught because of that. We had an objection, you know, we've had a complaint, so that led to the submission, and actually the complainants have, the objectors are quite vociferous about it. They really are vociferous now. We all bring our own values to things, don't we? Who's to say my values are any better or worse than anybody else's? But I'm here to make a balanced recommendation to you, and we're saying we've had an objection, we've responded to it, the applicant's amended the scheme, and we think that's good enough. The applicant, the neighbour doesn't agree with that. Well, that's, and it's at that point that the current scheme of delegation requires you then to make the decision, because you're adjudicating on a dispute. But there are other schemes of delegation around the county that would not have brought this to you. And so if you want me to look at that, I will look at the scheme of delegation.
Councillor Janier, did you have a question?
Yes. In terms of the refusal of not accepting the trellis, how tall or how, what level of trellis work had the occupants proposed?
Page 67, and if you look at that, it's pretty much to the height of the eaves of the shed. It's just like a bit of ordinary garden trellis, really.
Yep. Thank you.
Any more questions? Councillor Hope.
Thanks, Chair. I might maybe sound daft as this, but are any set down measurements of how big a tree house can be or can't be?
Mainly about the heights above ground. It's not the size of the thing usually. It's about the height. It'll be the 4 metre height criteria. It'll be the I'd imagine it'll be the 4 metre height criteria from ground level. Yeah, but it's suspended above, yeah. So I mean, and sometimes ancillary buildings get caught. I'm not saying this one does, but sometimes ancillary buildings get caught because of proximity to a boundary, and that can limit things to only 2.5 metres where it's within 2 metres of a boundary. It's one of those odd things that when they changed the general permitted development order in 2015 to make it more permissive, actually it caught more things, which is a bit odd, really. Bearing in mind it was a deregulatory exercise. So sometimes it will relate to proximity to a boundary or a height or whatever, rather than a particular size. You know, an amount of garden covered is very rarely the issue. It's usually a height.
In view of that, I mean, saying they've been overlooked, I mean, I could say I'm being overlooked because I've now got kids next door, children. We've been empty for 30 years. We've got a trampoline, and they can lift up, come straight over the top of the hedge, and hey, hi, Eric. Yeah. I rest my case.
Any more questions? Lovely. We shall move into debate, and the ward member is Councillor Jean Hudy.
Thank you, Chairman. I would move that we accept the officer's recommendation and vote for approval.
Lovely, Councillor Burr. Go.
Well, in all my years on planning, this has been the most interesting case that we've had to deliberate over. Maybe I should declare an interest because I would like to build a tree house. My tree house won't be quite as large as that, but it's up to every individual how large they want their tree house. And the children who play in that, or the adults who play in that, will have good fun. it is disappointing that the neighbours feel that they are overlooked. It really is, but I think the nail really was hit on the head when it's temporary. It really is temporary, and that'll probably last 10 years, and that'll be it, and the children will grow up, etc. But I do think it's a shame when people, you know, they have a grievance, and we have to take that seriously. We really do. I don't think it's detrimental to this not going through, so I would support you. And as I say, it's been a very, very interesting application.
Councillor Cleary.
At the risk of going overboard on this, yeah, and I think the fact is that the applicant has offered to put further screening up. The existing overlooking is at a distance and oblique. I've already repeated it, but I think we have a duty to address people's concerns. They've been addressed. It's absolutely de minimis, the perceived, it is a perception of them, absolutely. I think that's been addressed. I think we should support that. As Councillor Burr, I wish I could have the design. I'm going to see if David Ward, so I must have had fun drawing this up. But no, I'll leave it at that.
Right, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote. That is unanimous. Agenda item 10 is the list of applications determined under delegated powers, pages 70 to 77 on your agenda. And agenda item 11 are the appeals, pages 78 to 84 on your agenda. Gary, do you have anything you wish to add on those?
No, not really. I think the decision at at Westo was quite an interesting decision. Planning and a listed building consent proposal. So it's two for the price of one there. If you lose it, you lose two appeals. If you win, you win two appeals. But it actually is quite a distinctive building and quite visible as you approach Norton from the south on that back road there. And there was really a sort of an impasse between sort of officers and the applicants in terms of how to approach extending the property. And it was good to see that we got an inspector who was obviously tuned into heritage issues, which was quite good to see. Yeah, well, you don't always get them, do you? And the Whitby Road Pickering appeal, again, was one where it was an issue about the character and appearance of the area, trees and neighbouring amenity, and the inspector threw it out on all three, so it was quite a comprehensive decision. Yeah, the appeal stats are looking pretty heavy. I think we've lost two the whole year, but because of the small numbers, it's quite an erratic thing.
Okay, that concludes. Councillor Bear.
Just any other business, just regarding that last application, could we take you maybe up on that, Gary, that really I don't think we need to be discussing tree houses in a committee?
We are, as part of the new ways of working, looking at the scheme of delegation, you know, because we haven't looked at it really in the context of amending it at all over the last sort of 7 or 8 years, I would guess. But there are applications that we bring that are sometimes we think to ourselves, why on earth are we bringing it? And you probably think the same. Equally, we don't want to not bring you stuff. Equally, sometimes we get major applications where they're major just because of the size and you're thinking, is it really something we want to deal with? So I think that's a piece of work for Jill and myself, just to tweak the scheme of delegation to really be dealing with things where there's a genuine issue or where things are important and you need to know about them. So yes, I think that's a piece of work to be done. It will help us and help you.
Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Can I just ask one last question? Is there any proposal to look at the development limits of our villages, you know, the ones that are not service villages and not our primary development areas? Prospects of looking at those development limits?
Not in this round, because we're going forward with the basis of the development limits setting the sort of arena for these infill plots for the local needs occupancy plots. But as soon as we get out the other side of the site's document, which will be towards the sort of, yeah, then the review of the plan, I think, is the avenue for that. And at that point, we'll be reviewing how the strategy policies are working or not working. And also looking at development limits at that point would seem to be the logical point to be doing that.
Thank you. That concludes the agenda. And thank you all for coming, for interesting questions and good debate, and wish you all a safe journey home.